Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Tuesday, June 11th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And members, thanks for being here so promptly. I know that there is a lot going on in your lives, and so we will try to move as quickly as we can through these bills. I think we'll start with the bills that are scheduled for public hearing and then come back to the ones that are just posted for work session. And so how about if we start with, looks like we have people who are okay for a little bit of time. We start with another bill. Okay, so let's open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 844.
Okay.
And Senators Beyer, Lori, would you tell us about this? And then I think we've got two members of the committee who wanted to testify on the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 844 directs the Public Utility Commission to establish voluntary program for greenhouse gas emission reduction. Specifies purpose of program is to create incentives for public utilities to invest in projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and provide benefits to customers of public utilities. Delineates eligibility criteria and process for incentivizing the program. There is a -3 hard copy amendment, and that is also on OLIS. It limits the applicability of the measure to public utilities that furnish natural gas. It replaces the term greenhouse gas, terms greenhouse gas and greenhouse gas emissions with emission. It requires final orders issued by Public Utility Commission under the measure to specify the type of ratepayer from whom utility may recover costs incurred in investments made. There is no revenue impact on the -3 amendment, and we have a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued.
Okay, thank you, Lori. And just for anyone that's listening, either in the room or out in internet land, we did post this for the purpose of considering the -3 amendment. So that is the version of the bill that we will be taking testimony on. Senator Beyer, did you want to lead off the testimony? Or?
Sure, we can go down and testify.
Senator Starr, are you?
Do you want to go down there?
Yeah, let's do that. Sure. Little jaunt for you. Just to see how we look from the other angle. Okay, welcome to Senators Beyer and Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Lee Beyer, State Senator representing Central Lynn and Lane counties in Oregon. Senate Bill 844 is something that I had drafted and actually was introduced in the interim by the Business and Transportation Committee. It's been through a lot of discussion and up to an amendment, which Senator Starr has worked on greatly with me in the utilities. Colleagues, the thing that the bill addresses, if you go back to 2007, the Assembly set some pretty specific greenhouse gas reduction goals, and as the legislature is fond of doing, we've passed a whole raft of programs that were mainly mandates on the utilities and others and how to get there. When I looked at this in the fall and started talking with the utilities, I said, wouldn't it be nice to just set a voluntary program out there in place and allow the utilities, who obviously probably have the best idea about what's going to work to address this issue, let them come up with proposals. Now, to be very candid, there's various levels of discussion on this, and as we got farther into it, the only one that had an interest in proceeding were the natural gas companies. So that's what this bill will address, and Senator Starr to get that. One of the issues with regarding natural gas that's of great interest to me has to do with transportation. And we have a chicken and egg situation with that. If you look at the price of diesel or petroleum gasoline today, we all know where that's going. It's going up. If you look at the proliferation of natural gas sources, if you have the conversion to use natural gas or propane, you're looking at the equivalent of about 40% of the cost to do that. But the chicken and egg comes into, there's certainly the technology there to do it, but it's what comes first? Do you convert the vehicles to use the alternative fuel, or do you have to have the infrastructure in place to get there? One of the intents of this bill is to try to create a partnership between the public and the private companies and create a network that will allow the evolution of that over time. I want to stress the word voluntary. This is not a mandate. This provides for voluntary participation by the gas companies and directs the PUC to work with them to do that. That's a very brief overview. Senator Starr can comment on the work he's been doing.
Great.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Senator Bruce Starr. I have the privilege of representing Western Washington County. I'm Senate District 15. I want to testify in favor of the Dash 3 amendments and thank Senator Beyer for his work on bringing Senate Bill 844 to us. Quite honestly, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill as it was originally introduced had a number of folks that were very concerned about the language of the bill. I saw the guts of the bill, the core idea in the bill is a good thing, and wanted to work with a number of stakeholders to alleviate their concerns about the bill and really focus on where the supporters of the bill wanted to go. That's what brings us to the Dash 3 amendments, that it's a very targeted voluntary pilot program, natural gas specific. I think you'll hear testimony about from a couple of the stakeholders who have interest in pursuing a voluntary opportunity with natural gas. That's basically what brings me here today in support of the Dash 3 is, one, again, targeting the bill in a way that works for interest groups that want it and taking care of the concerns of certain stakeholders that had concerns. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd ask for your support of the Dash 3 amendments.
Okay, well, thanks for kicking off the hearing. Any questions for our colleagues? Okay, join us back up front. And we have three more people signed up to testify on this bill, and so I'll call them all at once, Margie Hoffman, Bob Russell, and Gary Bauer, if the three of you would like to come forward.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I'm Governor John Kitzhaber's Energy Policy Advisor, and just want to thank you all for taking the time today to hear Senate Bill 844. I'd like to thank Senator Beyer for his leadership on this bill and Senator Starr for your work also on the Dash 3 amendments. Just want to reiterate what the senators have already said. At the governor's office, we've been looking for ways that we can continue to make headway on energy efficiency projects to help ratepayers save money on their utility bills. To create local jobs, to look at ways that we can harvest local energy resources. So we worked really hard to bring forward this voluntary carbon reduction program that if people want to bring projects forward, if that is something that they choose to do, they can work in partnership with their utility company. And this bill gives them regulatory certainty that they can bring projects forward before the Public Utility Commission and we'll be able to do that work. So happy to answer any questions, but urge you to support the Dash 3 amendments and the bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. My industry has been working very diligently to reduce emissions from heavy trucks for well over a decade. And we're also starting to look at the truck of the future, which would have zero emissions. And we're thinking that in 2050 or so, we will be able to develop the technology to make that a reality. The existing technology that we have today, we have refined it to the point where we can't really get much more incremental improvement from the trucks that we're operating today. So one of the only ways that we can continue to reduce emissions is to change the fuel type. So we're very interested in moving from diesel to natural gas, and this was a great opportunity for us to start with the fueling stations, and then we can purchase the trucks and we can start that transition. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks very much for your testimony. And please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Barrow with Northwest Natural. Also here to encourage your support of the Dash 3 amendments. Quick background. For a natural gas utility, we basically buy the product and we sell the product. The only thing we add to it is mercaptan to make it stink, so you'll know if there's a leak. When we look at trying to change or address greenhouse gas issues, it basically requires us to work with our customers to find different ways to either use less or to use the product in ways maybe to offset their emissions, such as what Bob was talking about. So we're interested in looking at this, looking at some different voluntary projects. We don't necessarily have a long list of those at this point. They could include things like dairy digesters,
like?
Municipal waste systems, other things that we could use to maybe capture their emissions, or, again, doing something in the transportation sector, or more energy efficiency programs with residential customers. One of the things I want to put on the record is we are committed that we will work with our customers, and we'll work with them ahead of time. Nothing will go to the commission without our having sat down and gone through that process with all of our different customers and stakeholders. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thanks again. And that completes our sign-up sheet. And so I think we're in a work session. Senator Starr?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 844.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 844. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, amendment carries. Senator Starr?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 844 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 844 as amended by the Dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion?
Just a comment, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
This bill fits really nicely with a couple of other bills that we're working that are in Ways and Means. Hopefully we'll move to encourage the adoption of alternative fuels. We are in a situation today where consumers can save money if we use alternative fuels. I think that's important. There's the benefit of reducing the use of carbon. There's the benefit of using fuel sources that are North American central as opposed to outside of our hemisphere or our part of the world. I'm hopeful that not only can we move this bill, that those other bills can move as well, and we can have a number of options for the public as we come out of this legislative session.
Thank you for your comments. Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, we have a motion. Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Senator Beyer, you are the chief sponsor of this bill. Did you want to carry on the floor?
I have to joint carry it with Senator Starr if you would like.
Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. Then we will have co-carriers of Senators Beyer and Starr, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 844. And let us move to SPR 1. Okay, I'll open a public hearing and work session on SJR 1. And Lori, would you please tell us what we're looking at here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Resolution 1 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to finance the Corpus of Oregon Student Opportunity Fund. I'm going to direct you to the effect of the committee amendment, the Dash 5s, because that has been put forth by the proponents and actually changes the top paragraph. So the Dash 5 amendments changes held in trust to used in reference to the fund, allows use of monies for lawful purpose if emergency declared by governor and use approved by 4/5 of Legislative Assembly members present in each house, if Legislative Assembly has approved plan to replenish fund on appropriate terms, allows use of all or portion of monies in fund to pay principal of interest on and premium on indebtedness incurred under measure provisions if emergency declared by governor and use approved by 4/5 of Legislative Assembly members present in each house. It establishes the next general election as the date for referral and ballot, and it makes certain other technical changes. There's no revenue impact on the Dash 5. There is a fiscal impact statement issued. All of those should be hard copy attached to your other documents.
Okay, thank you, Lori. And members, as you heard, we posted this for a second time with the Dash 5 amendment. So I'm going to start. We have several people signed up to testify. I'm going to start by calling State Treasurer Ted Wheeler, if you'd like to come forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ted Wheeler, State Treasurer. I want to thank you for taking up Senate Joint Resolution Number 1. I'll be very brief in my remarks, and I have Michael Salvaggio here from the Treasury to answer any technical questions you may have about this. I think you've all seen it. The purpose of Senate Joint Resolution Number 1 is to take to the voters of the state of Oregon a proposal which addresses higher education access and affordability. It does so by creating a permanent growing fund dedicated to student aid, and the bill also has a key goal of incentivizing, increasing, and improving vocational training and technical training programs in the state of Oregon. I would also turn your attention to the Dash 5 amendments and ask for your support, not only of the overall Senate joint resolution, but the Dash 5 amendments as well. Thank you for having me here today.
Great. Well, thank you for your testimony. And we also had Mike Salvaggio signed up. Were you just here as backup? Okay. Great. Do we have any questions for this witness? Go ahead, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In almost any project we've used general fund bonding for, I think in every project, the debt service is paid out of that agency's budget from either some source anticipated or cash flow or some identifiable source of revenue, and therefore the benefit to the agency and the revenue stream from the agency were certainly connected. So this is a situation where we're asked to pay for these debt service requirements from an agency like DAS that has no real direct connection to higher ed, and it isn't therefore a benefit and cash flow connected by an agency. It's an agency over here paying for a benefit that's disconnected from that agency. Why would we break this tradition?
Thank you, Senator Farioli, through the chair and members of the committee for the question, and it is a good question. Two clarifying points. First of all, the state treasury is involved in higher education through the actions of the legislative body. The treasury is the administrator of the Oregon 529 College Savings Plan. So in that capacity, we come into contact not only with students directly, but also their families. We hear their stories about their needs when it comes to higher education in this state. We hear the stories from the 8 out of 10 students who qualify for and apply for the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program but gain access to no support whatsoever, leading Oregon to be, I believe, number 45 in the nation in terms of overall student aid. So already the Treasury is involved. With regard to the funding mechanism that you refer to, Senator Farioli, we proposed that we use general obligation debt through a completely separate bill, Senate Bill 11. As one potential source of funding for this effort, but the reality is we're open to many different alternative sources in addition to bonding capacity. We suggested the bonding capacity because there is an opportunity here around artificially low interest rates that would allow us to arbitrage and to help grow that permanent sustainable funding without raising taxes, but there's been many other good ideas proffered, including Senator Beyer, who had put forward what I thought was a very smart alternative proposal. We're agnostic in terms of how this ultimately gets funded. The question before you with regard to Senate Joint Resolution number one is to refer the overall question to the voters. It provides consistency, permanence, and flexible options to the legislature should you decide to create any source of financing dedicated towards this fund.
And did you want to, I'm sorry, were you about to follow up? It looks like we've got a further clarification.
Madam Chair, it was just in reaction to the comment, we're agnostic. It sounds like we're trusting at least in the ability of the state of Oregon to repay. But in most of the other projects, we've identified a clear revenue source and a benefit and an agency, and those things are connected. And particularly when you're taking a bonding program to the public to approve, that has been helpful in making the argument that, look, here's a revenue stream, here's the source of the revenue, and it's likely to continue. Here is the benefit to the agency. And those things usually have been used to market the ask so that we get a positive response from the electorate. In this case, you might be agnostic, but I don't know whether it's in God We Trust or the full faith and credit of the state of Oregon, but you're disconnecting the benefit from an agency who usually takes a bonding obligation very specifically for a purpose and says, look, we're willing to go into hock for this benefit, and here's how we're going to pay for it. We're sort of separating the individual pieces and parceling them off to different organizations. And I don't know if that's a good precedent to set, so I'd like to hear you say why you think it's a good
sure.
precedent.
Sure, and I appreciate the question, Senator
Farioli. Thank you for that indulgence.
Sure. Go ahead.
Sure, but I reserve the right to jump in, too. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, somebody talk.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Slavaggio from the State Treasurer's Office. And with regard to those two particular issues, I want to first put on record very clearly before we get too far into the weeds on how exactly the administration of any potential bonds would turn out. That's something that can be statutorily described in a separate bill and is to an extent in Senate Bill 11. For sure, I think a lot of default language around that program is used, so I don't think it's much different than 11P bonds, 11D bonds, 11Q bonds. But the issue at hand in front of us right now, Senate Army Resolution 1, I want to be very clear on the record that I don't believe the word bonds appears in the resolution. The resolution allows the state legislature to extend the state's credit. In most cases, that means extending that to a bond buyer. However, more fundamentally, this just creates options that that credit could be applied to bonds. It could be applied to direct deposits. It could be even applied to contingent deposits. And I think that the thing to keep in the forefront of our minds during this hearing is that SGR1 is going to present all those options to the legislature, whatever we decide to move forward with regards to how that bonding is set up, which agency it's applied to, et cetera, how orthodox or unorthodox we want to keep that would be described in a statutory bill.
Okay, Senator Beyer, I sensed a question. No? Okay. Any further questions for these folks? Okay, looks like you've answered them all, and thanks very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And we have three other people signed up to testify on SJR 1, and they are Joel Fisher and Emma Calloway and Tim Cowan. And you're welcome to go ahead in the order that I called you, or not.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of the Oregon Business Association. Achieving the goal of 40-40-20 is a key pillar of the Oregon Business Association's legislative agenda, and we think that SJR 1 and the Opportunity Initiative is exactly the kind of creative thinking that we need to help get us there. We've kind of, Oregon has relied too much on importing a workforce, an educated workforce. We hear quite often from our members that they need to go outside of the state to hire people. The high price of college is a significant barrier for all Oregonians, for low-income Oregonians in particular. As a former one-time recipient of the Oregon Opportunity Grant, I can attest to, you know, what a good thing it really is, and that it was very helpful to me and to lots of other students, and we're supportive of this bill. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for your testimony, and please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Association, here to speak in support of Senate Joint Resolution 1. 80% of the neediest students in Oregon who qualify for the Oregon Opportunity Grant do not receive that aid, which means only 20% of students do. And we think that that gap is something that could absolutely be filled by a creative mechanism like Senate Joint Resolution 1. And we think that some of the flatlining enrollment going on at Portland State University, the tuition going up by 72% in 6 years at the University of Oregon, and a number of other affordability factors, is the reason we're seeing fewer students feel like they can that they want to start a post-secondary education degree or want to continue on and finish with a bachelor's. So for those reasons, we think that it's about time we come up with a different way to think about affordability for our lowest income and neediest families in the state of Oregon. One thing that we also like about this bill is that it doesn't necessarily prescribe describe how the Oregon Opportunity Grant dollars would be used. A number of members of the legislature this session have come up with ways to increase completion through this grant, ways to think about science, technology, engineering, math, and possibly art, so STEM or STEAM. And we can't do any of those things, you know, help students get from their first to their second year of college, really focus on completion without more dollars in the Oregon Opportunity Grant. We hope that this could be an option. Even without bonding, we want this to be an option, and so SJR1 is something that we're absolutely supportive of, and we think that consistency and flexibility and a focus on affordability are all reasons why this bill should pass. Thank you very much, and we hope for your aye vote.
Thank you for your comments. Please go ahead.
Chairman Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I'm just speaking on behalf of being a citizen.
Could you, excuse me, but just say your name for the record?
Tim Cowan. I have not discussed this with the Department of Higher Ed, just to qualify that. First of all, I would like to know how this amendment would impact current statutes. What will the impact of establishing this fund have on the corresponding debt that Oregon has and its credit rating based upon what the sources are to repay? It says in Section 3 that there'll be a fund held in trust for the exclusive benefit of the Oregon students. And then Section 6, or Subset 6, says if the governor declares an emergency, the legislature can transfer all or a portion of the monies held in that fund to the state of Oregon for any lawful purpose. It doesn't seem to me that that's a trust. On number 5, subset 5, I would propose that you eliminate it and that you address any specific conflicts that occur. I don't have a lot of money, so my only way to take on any or question any portion of this amendment is to take it is through the court system, and I don't have that much money. So I'd like to have it addressed before it goes out for the voters. That's the extent of my testimony.
Okay, thanks for your testimony. And yeah, we can certainly get an answer to that question. Are there any questions, though, for these witnesses? Senator Starr, go ahead.
Thank you. Questions that I have is the first two witnesses brought up the cost of tuition, the cost to keep going up, the affordability question. You know, I don't see how this bill addresses those cost drivers at all. If you're going to borrow money, that money you're eventually going to have to pay back with interest. And so talk to me about how this bill does anything at all. One, give me just something that tells me how this bill, if we pass this bill, goes out and the voters approve it, and we create some sort of bonding borrowing program, that you're going to address the cost of tuition, or you're going to address you know, affordability, because I don't see it here at all.
Thank you, Senator Starr, for the question, and through the chair. This bill would specifically not create a borrowing program for students. It would give students the Oregon Opportunity Grant, which is $1,950 a year. And I guess it's possible that those dollars could be turned into a borrowing program at some time, but I do think that the Oregon Opportunity Grant does shrink the gap between tuition and the federal financial aid, and it does help to create a more affordable system for students. I think the second part of your question was, what about this bill is about cost drivers in general, and I think that we all should be looking carefully, and the Student Association has been asking for PERS reform and increased revenue as a way to getting at the cost drivers of higher ed. This bill doesn't address that, but it does make it less expensive for the neediest of families to be able to afford school.
Just, Madam Chair, follow up to that.
Sure, follow up.
So I appreciate the response, but the Oregon Opportunity Grant exists today. I mean, that program exists today. Without this is a borrowing program. This is, if the voters say yes, all you're doing here is saying that the state of Oregon can borrow money against some future appropriation by a future legislature, which will have to be paid back, mm-hmm. and some biennium, some legislators sitting behind a dais like this at some point in time are going to have to decide, are going to have to allocate a certain percentage of the general fund dollars that are available to them to pay back the bonds mm-hmm. that are used by a previous legislature that, to help to send kids to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, again, I don't see, I potentially you're front-loading some students, but you're robbing the opportunity from students down the line because you're going to have to pay the debt back.
And just to clarify before you answer that, I think as was said earlier, the bonding is not in this referral. So that certainly is one thing that could be considered in the future, but there also are other potential sources of funding. So, but please go ahead if you have a response.
Senator Starr, thank you for the question. It's my understanding that the hope is that this will create a fund that we can build interest off of, similar to an endowment, that we will actually be able to create more Oregon Opportunity Grants in the long term than we would if we had just moved $100 million additionally into the Oregon Opportunity Grant pool for this biennium. So I think this is meant to be a long-term solution to what is a current underfunding problem.
Okay, additional questions? Senator Ferrioli?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually, after hearing a description of the program, I understand what the comment was by the State Treasurer about being agnostic. And Madam Chair, thank you for your clarification about the lack of reference to bonding. I think what I understood is that the Treasurer doesn't care where the money comes from. Doesn't matter. Could be borrowed or it could be bequeathed. You know, it could be fundraised or it could be any source. But I also understand what Senator Starr is referring to. To help you answer your question about how this lowers the cost for students, they don't have to pay the money back. So it does help students. The problem is the people that do have to pay the money back are taxpayers. So really what you're doing is just giving money to the students, which is for a good purpose, that's education. And that makes it more affordable for students who receive the grant. But the folks that have to pay that back will be somebody else, and that's probably the taxpayers of the state of Oregon.
And Senator Ferrioli, I think we will get the Treasurer's Office back up here to respond. But Senator Beyer, did you have a question for these good folks?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. We spent a lot of time talking about this in the Education Committee. And I think the question resolution probably isn't posed in the best possible light. Really, it's a question recognizing the problem with student debt and the lack of money that we're currently making available to help students attend with rising costs. The question to the citizenry is really, do you think we should establish an endowment, a long-term thing? And how, if the answer to that question is yes, how you get to the endowment could be from a number of different funding sources. It could be a decision that we would annually, the legislature would put money in. It could be a decision that we, in the current environment where you can borrow money for less than a couple of percent on government bonds, that you borrow it now, it's cheaper to repay it and start building the corpus that way. It could be philanthropic gifts. Or it could be, you know, a subsequent referral to the voters could be, okay, you said yes to this. Here's a proposal with a dedicated funding stream to build that corpus to some target. But at the end of the day, Senator Ferrioli's right. What you're doing is asking others to build a fund that will be used in a sustainable method once you have the corpus to help Oregonian, young Oregonians attend school. I mean, that's the nature of the beast here. But embodied in this referral is no commitment to do that. It's just merely asking the question of the voters, is this something that voters think we ought to do?
Thanks for that clarification, Senator Beyer. And I don't see any other questions for the three of you, so thank you very much for your testimony. And if we could get the State Treasurer's Office back up here to clarify, that would be great.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Michael Salvaggio on the stand. And There were a few issues that that came up that I'd like to address for the record. If you happen to have OLIS open and you go to the, I believe it should be the top committee exhibit on SJR 1, it's entitled something like Salvaggio Pamphlet. Page 2 has a chart of OUS costs over the last 20 years. So to get at the issue of how this addresses tuition and underlying costs, I think it's important to remember that those are two very separate measurements. And over the last 20 years, total OUS costs per student are actually tracking inflation from 1989 to 2009 is the data that we have. So that may come as a surprise to students that are being saddled with more and more debt and seeing their tuition and fees increase. The issue, though, is as the state's share has been decreasing over that same period of time, what we've seen is a situation in which all due respect to the legislature over the last 20 years, it's a much easier take to move that money around, and I think that that's what is causing a constriction in the state's share and a commensurate increase in tuition and fees. So what this measure actually gets at is it's a way to add some certainty and reliability to that system to lock up a stream of revenue that will, in fact, be there over the long term. So that even if the state is has flexibility in terms of its the bulk of what's going into the OUS system as the state's share, we've got this growing revenue stream that continues to come off and continues to build up out of this endowment that becomes more and more reliable over time as opposed to less and less reliable. So so that's the first issue I wanted to address. There was the there was a question about impact on the state's debt capacity, and I wanted to, again, for the record, put down that no one in Treasury, well, first let me back up a step and say I think we've gone over the fact that this measure doesn't specifically call out bonds. I'm not going to play a game and suggest that that's not a realistic option here, but we do think that that's something that should be discussed through Senate Bill 11, which is in the Ways and Means Committee. However, no one in the Treasury, at least, is suggesting that we expand beyond the state's current prudent debt capacity as recommended by the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission. At the beginning of session, the SDPAC will set a particular prudent debt capacity for general obligation bonds. That's based on industry standard measurements that are designed to keep the state's credit rating very, very high. And we've been very disciplined in following those limits over the last few years that have resulted in credit rating increases. So we do not, absolutely do not want to expand beyond that capacity and incur more debt than we're able to pay back within industry standard prudent limits. So if that is an option that we decide to pursue later, we are, for the record, advocating remaining within those prudent limits.
Okay, thank you. I think that does clarify the question that was raised earlier, but it looks like Senator Starr has another one.
Thank you. So the language directly out of the resolution basically says that the credit of the state of Oregon may be loaned and indebtedness incurred to A and B, finance the corpus of the Oregon Student Opportunity Fund, or refinance indebtedness incurred under this section. That was, does the state create indebtedness other than by selling bonds? I mean, are we talking about COPs?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, it can. It typically, since we've passed Article 11Q, we do not issue COPs anymore. But we've had some discussions with Bond Council and DOJ on this subject, exactly what indebtedness means and how we're constricted without this specific language. One of the specific questions was, can we set up a contractual arrangement to make direct deposits into the fund over a set period of time? So, for example, could the legislature pass a bill that says we're going to commit to depositing, and this is completely hypothetical, $20 million a biennium so long as the kicker doesn't kick or some economic trigger, for example. Could that contractual relationship be set up, even if we're not engaged in bond selling. And the question and the answer that came back to us was that would be considered indebtedness to a few one legislature taking on future indebtedness. So what this does, I think, is this language allows us to take on the legal definition of indebtedness, which can be applied to that kind of arrangement, basically any kind of future commitment, whether or not that involves bonds. And I can't think of a situation in which that hasn't involved bonds up to this point, because we don't have any kind of constitutional allowance to incur indebtedness for this kind of a fund. That's the aim of the language, is to really create that flexibility.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. Members, do you have any other questions for the Treasurer's
Office? I'm sure I have plenty of other questions, but I don't know that I want to put them on the record at this time.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And that completes our sign-up sheet. And we did open a work session, correct, on this bill. I sense that we may need someone to make a motion. And Senator Beyer.
Not this time, huh?
Madam Chair. Senator Beyer, we need first the dash three amendment.
I move to adopt the dash five amendments dated
dash
June
4th.
Dash five?
Yes.
Amendments dated June 4, 2013.
Okay, Senator Beyer has moved the dash five amendments to SJR 1. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Stark.
I'm not sure why allowing the Legislative Assembly to have access to the fund will make it more likely for the voters to vote for the resolution, but I'm not the proponent of the resolution, so.
Okay, so I'll take that as a comment. So we are on the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 1 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Joint Resolution 1 as amended by the dash fives to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I get what's proposed. The problem for me is that we're clearly creating an obligation for future legislators. If SJM 1 is adopted by voters and it's funded, and I keep thinking about the quality education model where we thought what we were doing was just having a discussion about what was necessary and reasonable to allocate to K-12, and ended up with years of litigation and a potential contractual obligation, even in constitutional obligation. So I think we start off with great ideas but end up building mousetraps. I think this is one of those. So I'll be voting no on the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Ferrioli. Further discussion? So I would just say that I think this referral creates an opportunity, so to speak, to do something about a huge problem that we're faced with in Oregon. I think the fact that we have not been able through the years to find a way to actually support young people and other students in being able to access higher education, and that we rank in many ways near the bottom in terms of our support for higher ed, means that we really do need to explore all the possible tools that there are to do something about this. And while I appreciate the members who have concerns about this, I think it is, after all, a referral to the voters. It does hold the promise of actually creating a sustainable piece of a solution to the fact that we've got part of our economy now in danger of not being able to recover to full health. What we really do need is people able to afford an education, and then having gotten that education, the ability to join employers who need them trained to do those great jobs that we can't always fill with Oregonians, so to me this is an opportunity to put before voters a solution, and if adopted, one that I think will create a real promise. So that is my opinion. Senator Beyer.
Well, my opinion would be in similar vein. I respectfully disagree with my colleague. I don't believe, in fact, I know, this does not create an obligation or a future obligation. It may create the opportunity for a future obligation if the citizens choose to support it. At worst, it creates, could create an expectation of future legislative action, but this doesn't do this. This merely poses the question to the citizenry, is this something you would support?
Okay. Further discussion, Senator Burdick.
Yes, I want to echo those comments and just say that the debt problem that we have in this state, in this country, is a real crisis. And we're going to have to address it. And when we find a way to address it, we may not even know what that might look like right now. But when we find a way to address it, we must be ready to put it in place, because the debt that students are coming out of college with now is just unacceptable. It's changing our whole society, because students no longer have the ability to come out of college and do some social service work early in their career. They have to be thinking about their loans. They have to be paying loans instead of buying houses and starting families. So it's had a huge negative impact on the whole society. So when we finally find a way to address it, I want to be ready, and that's why I'm supporting this measure.
Further comments, Senator Starr?
Thank you. I'm going to be a no today, with the reserve the right to study it and maybe change my vote before it gets to the Senate floor. But I'm concerned that you send a message that somehow this fixes the issues, the challenges in higher ed, that this somehow addresses the affordability issue, somehow addresses the fact that costs are going up. There are bills in this legislative assembly that, if they were adopted by the majority, could actually cut some of those costs. But this isn't one of them. And so I'm concerned about debt. Senator Burdick talks about the debt that students are carrying. That's a big problem. But we also have to look at the debt that the government's carrying. And eventually, those bills come due. And, you know, this bill, this resolution, will incur some sort of future obligation if it were adopted, and if the legislature, if it were to pass, and if the future legislature were to create some sort of debt mechanism under the new allowances under the Constitution. At some point, those bills have to be paid by somebody. And so those are issues I think we need to be cognizant of, well aware of, concerned about, notwithstanding the Treasurer's staff's statement about understanding kind of our debt capacity and the debt limit. But so I wanted to get those things on the record. This doesn't address cost drivers, really. There are other things that we need to be doing to be looking at that.
I appreciate your comment, Senator Stern. I'd just point out that it also doesn't preclude addressing those cost drivers. I think some of the witnesses alluded to the fact that this is not a complete solution to what I think we would all acknowledge is a big problem for our state. So I think we do need to keep working on those other issues too. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't go forward with this, to me. So any further discussion, members? Okay, seeing none, Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Perry?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. And the motion carries. And we need someone to carry this, and Senator Beyer has volunteered, so Senator Beyer will carry it on the floor, and I'll close the work session on SJR1. And moving right along, I guess we'll go to 3434. Okay, so I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3434. Lori, could you please tell us about this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3434 defines 1,000 feet to be radius from any point on boundary of elementary school, secondary school, career school, or child care facility for purposes of determining whether certain activities and operations are unlawful. There's a dash 2 amendment before you, and that simply makes certain provisions prospective only. There is no revenue impact on the dash 2. There's a minimal fiscal impact. Again, those are attached as hard copy to your staff measure summary. It moved off the House floor with a 56-aye vote with 4 people excused.
Thanks very much, Lori, for that explanation. And members, hopefully you have the dash 2 amendment in front of you. And we do have 2 people signed up to testify, and so I'll call them both, and that's Craig Chema and Jonathan Eames. Thanks for waiting so patiently during all these other interesting discussions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Prevention Education and Recovery Association, otherwise known as OPRA, and we're here to support the Dash 2 amendments. And while many, if not most, consider me the expert on legislative council and amendments, I will turn it over to Mr. Chamoff to explain the true impact of the amendments. He has a little bit of knowledge on this. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to appear in front of you this late in your session. Greg Chamoff from the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, representing Allied Health, which operates methadone clinics throughout the state. For many years, the state has cited or approved the siting of methadone clinics using the measurement of 1,000 feet as a person walks, not as a person or crow flies. The bill before you in its current form would change that measurement. That's in and of itself a small hindrance to the siting of future methadone clinics. The problem with the bill as it's currently before you is it applies retroactively and would, if adopted in its current form, turn methadone clinics, the location of which the state has approved, into nuisances that local governments are required by law to abate. The purpose of the Dash 2 amendments is to take Section 2 of the bill and make it apply prospectively only, so that clinics that have been located following current state law will stay lawful in their current locations, and future methadone clinics will need to comply with the new calculation of 1,000 feet. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Senator Farioli.
Were these 1,000 feet calculated in Google Earth or drone miles? It's an air mile question, I think.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, currently the way that a clinic complies with the law is to hire a surveyor who then calculates by walking distance and presents that particular form of calculation to the state for its approval. I know that in the one instance in which there was a dispute about how the measurement should apply, Google Earth was in fact applied.
Okay, I don't see any other questions, so thank you very
much.
Thank
you, Madam Chair,
for your testimony. And members, we are, and there is actually a definition of how to measure this in the bill, it looks like, on page 3. So, members, we are in a work session. I think it's fair to say that this bill had an unintended consequence, and so the amendment before you will allow us to correct that unintended consequence.
Or Madam Chair, possibly legislatively institute other unintended consequences. Madam Chair, since we're in work session, I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendment stated 5-30-13.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3434. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3434 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3434 to the floor as amended with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And do we have a volunteer to carry this on the floor?
There's some member who deserves a late session hazing, Madam Chair. I recommend this is an excellent vehicle for that.
Are you volunteering?
Yeah, getting enough hazing. Thanks.
Senator Burdick, would you like to carry this on the floor?
What made you think of that, Madam Chair?
I was just turning my head in all directions.
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair.
In a straight line.
I got out of a line and I got out of a line.
Okay, thank you. Senator Burdick will carry this on the floor, and I will promise to protect her from any inappropriate hazing. Okay, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3434. And let's take a moment here to shuffle. And I think we can just go back to the top of our agenda. And so I'll start by opening a work session on Senate Bill 150. And Lori, I know we heard this previously, but would you give us a little update?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 150 was before you on the 8th of May. It increases the maximum civil penalty for violation of election law rule from 250 to 1,000. And that is the maximum. I want to emphasize that. It's discretionary. It eliminates the requirement that certain ballots be printed in different colors. And then the dash 2, which also is attached to your staff measure summary, increases the time allowed for mailing of ballots to 20 days before the date of election. There's no revenue impact on the dash 2. Minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued.
Okay. Members, this is a work session, and I do see that the Secretary of State's office is in the room if we have questions, but we did have a pretty thorough discussion of this bill when we heard it back on the 8th. So,
have the dash 2s been adopted?
The dash 2s have not yet been adopted because we didn't have a work session previously.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, we are in work session. I move the dash 2 amendments stated 5313 be adopted.
Thank you. Senator Farrioli has moved the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 150. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Any objection to the amendment?
I object.
Okay. Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Farrioli?
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Amendment is adopted. Senator Farrioli?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 150 as amended to the floor so they do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farrioli has moved Senate Bill 150 as amended by the dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion?
I'm going to oppose this bill for more than one reason. I don't believe that it makes sense to extend the number of days that ballots are out. In fact, I would recommend we condense them rather than expand them. And I'm concerned about the increase in the penalty that this bill also contemplates.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Starr. Further discussion? I'll just say that I do support this bill, and I do support increasing the number of days from 18 to 20, because in previous discussions in this committee, we've heard testimony about the mailing time, particularly for people in rural areas now, meaning that they will not get their ballots as soon as people in urban areas will. And so I think in the interests of voter participation and being able to have a level playing field for people to vote all over the state, it is actually a good change to be able to have ballots mailed so that they get to people in a timely manner. I certainly respect the difference of opinion on that point, and then would just point out that the penalty increase is a maximum penalty that makes the penalty for certain violations consistent with what the maximum penalty is for other violations, and we have had testimony that from the Secretary of State that they do not necessarily or usually impose these maximum penalties, particularly on first violations. So that's why I'm supporting this. Okay, so we are on a motion, and Mike, is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Ferriola?
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. And the motion carries. And so we need a carrier, and it looks like almost everybody has volunteered to carry something today. And so, Senator Ferrioli, I think it's down to you and me.
Madam Chair, if I have members of my caucus voting against a bill, I am loath to carry the bill.
I appreciate that. And so the chair will volunteer to carry this on the floor. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 150. And we have one more bill, and that is Senate Bill 789. And so I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 789. And Lori, could you please refresh our memories about this one?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 789 was before you on the 5th of June, just a week ago. Limits total period of time school district or educational service district is subject to actuarial analysis to 6 years when district provides health benefit plans other than those provided by Oregon Educators Benefit Board. Clarifies the requirement for actuarial analysis does not apply to certain self-insured districts, districts with independent health insurance trusts, or community college districts. There's a dash two amendment, hard copy attached to your staff measure summary that eliminates the current requirement actuarial analysis be performed at least once every 2 years. That dash two amendment has a no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued. And other amendments that we received are in OLIS and also are in the back there, hard copy.
Okay, thank you. So, members, we are in a work session, and...
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
I'd move the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 789.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 789, and would you like to... clearly, we're not able to move the bill out today with those amendments because we don't have a fiscal, but would you like to speak to your motion?
Yeah, these, when we met on this bill last week, I had the dash three amendments, which basically gutted and stuffed the existing language with language that would allow districts to opt out of OEBB. If all districts could opt out, it also got rid of the statute requiring this audit. The dash four is additive. It just adds on to the existing bill the language that would allow districts to opt out of OEBB. Clearly, based on the testimony that this committee received, this program is costing school district, every school district that is out is saving money. I would like to suggest that it would make sense for other school districts to have the opportunity to opt out so that they too could save money. In a situation where we are looking for every dollar to put into the classroom so that we can save teachers, so that we can lower class sizes, so that we can keep full school years, it makes sense to me to allow every school district that would decide to make a decision whether they want to be in this program or out and go into the private market. For us to allow a certain small number of districts to have that ability and not provide that to everybody is not fair, and yet it's clear that the districts that are out are saving money. Why wouldn't we want to have that opportunity be afforded and let a school board, and it'll be a school board decision, whether they wanted to stay in or shop to the private market. That's what the dash four is to do. Again, it adds to the existing bill. The base bill remains the same, and the dash fours would tack on that amendment.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved his amendment, and since that we probably need to call the roll on... Senator Beyer, did you have a comment?
I would like some more time to think about that motion. I would move that we table the motion.
Okay.
We still have a couple of days left where we could talk
about this. Well, that is true. We would have to take the bill up again next week. I'm just trying to think aloud what the effect of tabling this motion to move the amendment would be.
Madam Chair, if it were your decision not to move the bill today, I could rescind my motion. And we could take it up again at a future date. If your intent is to actually move the bill today, I'd like the motion to be acted upon. So it's
if you're willing to set this over and allow us to, you know, have some more time to look at it, that's fine, and I'll rescind the motion. But if the intention is to move the bill, I'd like to have a vote on the motion.
Okay, why don't we stand at ease for just a moment? I think the chair is prepared to carry this over to our next hearing, since we do have a hearing again tomorrow afternoon. So,
Madam Chair, I rescind the motion to move the dash 4 amendment.
Okay, so Senator Starr has asked unanimous consent to rescind his motion. Is there any?
You have mutual rescission.
Mutual rescission.
Sign an agreement, Madam Chair.
I see no objection to that. So. The motion is withdrawn, and that means that we are basically here to carry this over. Okay. It's not posted on our agenda currently, but I think it will be posted shortly. So I will close the work session on Senate Bill 789. And members, we are meeting again tomorrow. We have been doing some canvassing of your schedules to try to come up with times that work for everybody. And I believe that time for tomorrow is
3 o'clock
in the afternoon. I will just tell you that we're trying really hard to establish a regular rhythm, because as we are moving towards sine die, as everybody knows, issues arise unpredictably and schedules can be a bit chaotic. So we'll certainly try to do a 2-meeting a week, but just know that we will occasionally have to meet on an ad hoc basis when we have things that we need to deal with. So I appreciate your flexibility in that regard, and we will see you again tomorrow. With nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned.